Good evening. This is Mae Brussel. The title of this program is World Watchers, and it's program number 703, June the 3rd, 1985. For the local listeners down the coast and up to the northern area, I just want to remind you once again, and I won't be putting it on every broadcast, starting Saturday night, June the 8th on KMFO. There'll be a talk show from 6 to 8:30. Later, it'll probably spring on into a 3-hour 7 to 10 on Saturday night, 7 to 9 or 7 to 10, with John Arlen. It will co-host a talk show. People will be calling in, and this is your chance to talk back or ask questions or contribute to the World Watchers program that I hope you listen to every week. It's 1540 at the dial, at the top of the dial. It's a different format, the AM radio program. There's shorter answers. You have to take more questions per hour, that, you know, how fast they move along. But we'll be able to get a lot of information out and share things that you have on your mind. There's a new organization starting on the Monterey Peninsula in Carmel, and it's a national international organization called Bridges Worldwide, Building People-to-People Bridges. And the effort is to coexist, specifically with the Soviet Union, stop talking about nuclear war that ends life on planet, stop the arms race, and see if we can't have people exchanging visits, articles, lectures, travel, whatever, to find out what we have in common instead of keep underscoring the evil beast, the Antichrist, over in the Soviet Union. There are people working for peace, and I think you'll hear more about it. I think very important part of this effort to get an alternate to war came with the pressure of Star Wars, and the Bitburg episode finalized a lot of ideas in people's minds that is that event is causing them to move in other directions. Leonard Bernstein is taking a group of musicians around the world, 18,000 miles, on a tour for world peace. He doesn't have the power and might or the budget of the Pentagon, but getting into the minds and hearts of the people is important, because it takes the people to conduct the war and pass the bills for the money, for the binary nerve gas, for the MX, for the Star Wars. The people pay, and they send people to Congress who have permitted this so far, and maybe there'll be some pressure on the elected representatives to hold back, and they seem to be pulling back somewhat at the present time. A woman whose father started the McDonald's hamburger chain, Mrs. Kroc, lives in San Diego, and last week she spent $200,000 for a newspaper ad about the military-industrial complex, and she referred to the speech of Eisenhower warning us about the complex, and that's very important. That complex that Eisenhower warned about us is in power now. I never quite understood the conflict between General Eisenhower and Douglas MacArthur, and I've been detailing the historic differences between them and why the John Birch Society was always after General Eisenhower, or Otto Skorzeny was supposed to kill Eisenhower. And a lot of it has to do with the power of Douglas MacArthur and Charles Willoughby and the Southeast Asian, the fascists from Franco Spain, from Mussolini's Italy, from Nazi Germany, with Mr. Carl Wiedenbach, whose name became Charles Willoughby. I'll be doing more in the weeks or months to come on that issue. But when Eisenhower stepped down as president of the United States, he was afraid of this group, and that group is really in power today. And they hold the whole Southern Belt. Of course, he took Richard Nixon as vice president for 8 years, and Nixon's contacts with the munitions industry, the war-making machines, the Nazis, and the Southern Belt was a step towards Nixon's presidency, and what he was warning about, we got. But the point is that this woman is putting an ad in the paper, an expensive ad, and calling attention to these situations. And it's never too late, because they still are in the planning stage of Star Wars and haven't dropped the bomb. There are things happening, governments that are just on the brink of becoming fascist again. The World Banks are trying to totter them. But they are holding on, and a lot of times people get depressed about the news, and I cite the change in Argentina, where the Nazi death squads are out, and there's a democracy there now. In Bolivia, where the angels of death, the fiancés of death, the Klaus Barbie Nazi regime are out, and there is a hanging on in there, democracy in Bolivia. In Italy, Licio Gelli was forced to flee, and the plans of the Otto Skorzeny, Borghese clique were revealed in 1981, and Lizzie O'Gelli is still hiding. He's not in control as he would have liked to have been, say, starting in 1981, 82 with the coup there, and he tried one in the 70s. Greece got rid of their Nazi dictatorship. They had election this week, and Andreas Papandreou, who once was in exile, was reelected by a large majority, and he was even making statements such as the Korean airline being a spy plane and purposely downed. Bringing out those facts and calling attention to these issues didn't hurt him at all in the election. Brazil had an election, and I'm going to do a lot more on that for the most part of this program. And after 21 years, the military dictatorship was out. Of course, the president-elect was killed, and the vice president had only been 1 year with that party. He'd been 20 years with the military dictatorship, so we'll see why he switched alliances and what he's going to do with that very dangerous situation that could go back to the dictatorship. And Uruguay has had elections and put in a democratic government. There's no more Dan Mitrione and the torture and the death squads there. So there are changes in the world. Iran got rid of the Shah with the Savak, and a lot of people may say it's Khomeini better. The fact is that the powerful Shah was out, and the Pahlavi family was always linked to the Nazis. So these are examples of democracies that have thrown out the Nazi regimes and the death squads, and one that's left to be overthrown is the United States. And of course, I believe in 1963 we had our coup, and that we have to push these people out of office for whatever reasons are the most expedient, but they have to be removed from office so this country can go back to being whatever it was before World War II, and supplying the death squads and the means and the technology to murder people all over the world. But there are changes coming up, and I think one reason organizations such as Bridges Worldwide is being formed, and I've been invited to the first steering committee meeting and meet the members and so forth, is that people are realizing that to just confront each other with the mutually assured destruction or to make weapons and more weapons is ridiculous. And so finally, at a national and an international level, and I'll share some of the advisors with you and directors and officers soon, they're trying to find a better way, these people on the peninsula and around the country and also overseas, to meet, as I say, people from the Soviet Union, to make friends in other countries and to generate discussions of ways to communicate other than just bombing each other out. The news this week about Argentina, again, shows how fragile that democracy is. They just raided the home of the former security and intelligence agent who was planning a military coup again against Mr. Alfonsín, who's been president for 15 years. And they have caught these terrorists with their arms and electronic equipment and the cells that have been set up to overthrow that government. Eventually, besides going after a few black people who had a Brinks robbery in New York, that's the extent of our terrorism here, we'll have to go after the Aryan Nations, the Brotherhood, and really break open those cells with the arms that are 10 times equal to what are being stored in Argentina now to overthrow that country. The Washington Post and LA Times had a story on Bolivia. Bolivia's steady slide, will it be contagious? And they're telling how hard it is to have a democracy and that it may, with all of its inflation, slide back into the dictatorship, the cocaine group that were there before. And it's very fragile. They call attention to that, and they compare it to the Brazilian government. Can they hang in there? All of these democracies that I've cited are sort of like those septuplets. They stay the same and lose an out, and a couple of die. But maybe they can hold on. If the people have the will, maybe they can hold on. Some senators even came out this week and suggested that Caspar Weinberger should quit. He should have quit a long time ago for the policies he's had and for opening up as Secretary of Defense the attack against the Soviet Union, that they have to change their ways or they can't exist at all. That was practically the opening speech of Ronald Reagan when he became president. If they get mad about a $1,000 ashtray, that's okay. They maybe get mad for the wrong reasons, not for lives, but for money. But hiding $50 billion is a good reason. And that can continue the coup that we had in this country by buying up the news media, buying radio stations, TV, printed news, and supporting their own policies and supporting the funds of members of Congress running for Congress. There's no tab on this money, and if they can accumulate $50 billion hidden in their funds now and $50 billion next year, they can buy up everything in this country they need to wrap up the coup that took place in 1963. The Pentagon wants to duplicate its size. I suppose you read that. They want to spend $300 million to make a second Pentagon. They already have right now in New York City, Washington, D.C., 9.1 million square feet dedicated to making war. That's the Pentagon plus the offices that they rent out and in Washington, D.C. and in Maryland. So if we could only get 9.1 million square feet dedicated to people wanting peace, and with that amount of money, I'm sure we could have peace. I don't know how many of you saw the article of John DeLorean about DeLorean. It was on the wire services that he wants to start a new car company. It's interesting that his face is in the news. Several weeks ago, there was a full-page article about the hands that are protecting John DeLorean, and I'll go into that large article with you later, that he literally has this Teflon that bounces off. He's the luckiest man in the world. Well, now he wants to start up another DeLorean car company, a man named Marvin Katz, who's vice president of CAPAC, in Ohio, wants to help DeLorean start his motor company. And one of the people behind the DeLorean resurgence and to get money for his business is none other than Gordon Novell from New Orleans. Now, Gordon Novell worked for the British American Canadian Corporation for Permandex. He worked out of Miami with DoubleCheck. He worked with the CIA. He was part of the people involved with Clay Shaw down in New Orleans. And Jim Garrison, the district attorney, wanted to prosecute Gordon Novell for his alleged role in the Kennedy assassination. He's named throughout the Torbett document of his role with the people that killed John Kennedy. He surfaced at the time of Watergate, of Charles Colson hiring him, wanting to hire him to erase all the tapes in the White House of Richard Nixon. Nixon would still be president. It's interesting that Novell comes into this picture right now with DeLorean. He brags about having helped DeLorean get off on the case, the cocaine case, which I have alleged is linked to Joseph Mengele and Klaus Barbie. And with my connections of the Nazis to John Kennedy assassination, it's very interesting how Gordon Novell is surfacing with John DeLorean. He also has been allegedly been charged with sending letters to the members of the jury at the trial of John DeLorean, and they never checked this out to see whether he did it or not, but his name surfaced many times, blowing the case and telling them, don't believe this case, the government entraps these people. And instead of calling a new trial or following, who sent the letters to the members of the jury had their home and address, numbers, their names and addresses, personal mail, first-class mail, instead of prosecuting or investigating that or starting over, the case was thrown out and DeLorean was home free. And at the time that I started writing for Larry Flint and did only two articles, Gordon Novell moved into the home of Larry Flint and moved into the Hustler offices. When I was describing John Singlaub and the Los Angeles Police Department and the very people funding the Contras and our Central American policy right now, and also in my article on the Kennedy assassination, the links of the Nazis to the Kennedy assassination. So I have DeLorean with these allegations that he's linked to the Nazis in South America on the lam at Klaus Barbie, who was arrested, and the money for that he gave to Barbie that went into Mengele's account. So I think it's more than interesting that the person behind DeLorean Motors, a resurgence of the motors, is none other than the great Gordon Novell, who was never tried in New Orleans because the governor of Ohio, Mr. Rhodes, kept him in Ohio, and he never went to trial. Another interesting web that I'll detail much further in the next few weeks has to do with the story of Louis Farrakhan, who came home from Libya with $5 million in, quote, loan. He doesn't have to pay any interest on it. If $5 million to Mr. Farrakhan, who said that the Jewish religion was something to the effect of bastard religion, and I don't have the direct quotes in front of me. Now, Louis Farrakhan helped break up Jesse Jackson and the elections in 1984 that assured the presidency of Ronald Reagan. The blacks and the Democratic Party were far from each other, and this was a main issue until they could take the Geraldine Ferraro mafia funds and the illegal money that her husband had and tangle up the Democrats at both ends. Now, Gaddafi recently signed a contract and a mutual agreement and coexistence with the King of Morocco. The public relations man registered as a lobbyist for the King of Morocco until he became the appointed head of our United Nations, Vernon Walters, who represented Morocco for all these years, for the past 4 or 5 years, while he was our roving ambassador for Central and South America, a Knight of Malta, of course. And now Robert Keith Gray is a public relations firm that represents the King of Morocco and set up headquarters there for their annual party. And I do want to update that story. Gray represents the CIA. I've said that was the takeover of the Mullen office after Watergate. He was the escort of Rosemary Wood during the period when the tapes were to be erased and 18 minutes were erased. And Gordon Nobel was part of that whole operation around these people. Gray and Walters are close to Morocco. And with their agreement with Gaddafi, he then siphons money over to Farrakhan. So literally, the GOP, again, has the means and technology to just throw in all these bucks into Illinois to Farrakhan and split the Democratic Party, assuring the presidency of George Bush in 1988, heading Task Force 157 with Henry Kissinger and Robert Keith Gray, and breaking up that dumb Democratic Party who can't tangle any of these issues. And Farrakhan, again, will surface. Believe me, it is a registered Democrat, and Jackson and Siphon and splits the party, and you don't have to worry about who's going to be elected president. With this kind of money and these connections that have affected all the other coups around the world in every major country, and now the bucks are going right into the hands of Farrakhan from Gaddafi, who also worked with Edwin Wilson and Frank Turple of Task Force 157. Getting on to another subject, two names that show up all the time, William Clark, former National Security Advisor and Interior Secretary, and Jean Kirkpatrick, have been named on a panel by Ronald Reagan in charge of what to do with the American nuclear arsenal. Do you feel safer at night with Jean Kirkpatrick and Mr. Clark? William Clark, Army Intelligence, brought Helene von Damm over here from Vienna, from Germany and Vienna, and set her path to the Reagan administration in California, and then as the Secretary of Appointments, the head of appointments in the White House for 5 years, and then as our ambassador to Vienna. Now, Clark is going to sit with former Defense Secretary and CIA Director James Schlesinger, a retired General Frederick Krogsen, K-R-O-E-S-E-N. I want to spell that right. Frederick, F-R-E-D-E-R-I-C-K, Krogsen. And scientists Harold Agnew and William Perry. So Ronald Reagan has made one of his wonderful appointments, William Clark and Jean Kirkpatrick, deciding what to do with the nuclear arsenal. I talked about the controversial appointment of public broadcasting a while back. I didn't have time to update some of Reagan's appointments, but Mrs. Percy was kicked out. She was too liberal, and he put in a new head of public broadcasting that would see that it went political in the terms of moral majority and the Heritage Foundation and the way that the right wing that put Ronald Reagan in wants it to go. Edward J. Feister, P-F-I-S-T-E-R, just resigned as head of the president of the Corporation of Public Broadcasting. He sent in a letter and wanted to leave December 31st. They said you can leave by June the 15th, that's next week of this year. He wanted to do programs, trading shows and working with the Soviet Union and selling broadcasting, and so they kicked him right out, and he said there is definite political interference in public broadcasting. And funny, it's a strange thing, but Ted Turner of CNN picked up the ball that public broadcasting couldn't do, even though you're supposed to pay money to help them, and a lot of the funds come from the public, and the control is done in Washington. Ted Turner opened up a contract with the Soviet Union, and he's going to have reporters and shows and interviews and a constant discussion between the United States and CNN, which is a far cry from Jesse Helms and Dobison and the people that were behind him in trying to buy up a CBS. So it'll be interesting to watch what comes over Turner's broadcasting, the CNN. And I watch it more all the time, the news. I just can't stand the other broadcasting except for 60 Minutes. But now he's going to do what public broadcasting wouldn't allow. I also just want to update one item, May 27th, the Jack Anderson story about the agent. The title is Agent Told Drop It. I have never had a chance to continue the evidence of Raymond Donovan and all the information I'd like to share. We did a few broadcasts on Raymond Donovan, but just this past week, an FBI agent testified that when he came across allegations that Labor Secretary-designate Raymond Donovan had close ties to the underworld, he was told by the FBI to forget it, don't pursue it, leave the matter. The investigation he was talking about was the one I had on the air. They gave it a title, Tum Con, capital T-U-M-C-O-N, and it was Surveillance of Mobsters in 1979. And I talked about those 892 tapes that referred to Mr. Maselli talking with Raymond Donovan on them and discussing the murder of Mr. Frascone, among other things. There was a murder discussion in there. And Jack Anderson refers to the close links of Maselli to the Genovese family. And my allegations 2 years ago, almost 3 years now, is that Raymond Donovan got the appointment of Secretary of Labor because he had hired the person who was responsible for killing Jimmy Hoffa. And by getting rid of Hoffa, Richard Nixon and Ronald Reagan had all the Teamster votes. The GOP got the Teamster votes, and that the construction company was a very complicated construction company that involved the mafia and murders and murdering of witnesses. And the important thing about this article, just updating it, was that this agent, Special Agent Lawrence T. Sweeney, S-W-E-E-N-E-Y, of the FBI New York office, was told that by the informant that the Schiavone Construction Company had was tied to the mafia, and that Donovan, who was then serving as vice president, had particularly close ties to both the Genovese family and La Cosa Nostra. Of course, it's the Genovese and Vito Genovese that I'm interested in because of their work with Jack Ruby and Dallas, Texas, and with Army generals and so forth. Now, I'm not going to do too much on the trial in Rome for several reasons. It's taking place now, and I think you've seen some of the articles that came out. The first day, the very first day, Mr. Ajah, Mehemet, M-E-H-M-E-T, Ali, A-L-I, Ajah, A-G-C-A-A, got on the stand and shouted, I am Jesus Christ, I am omnipotent, I announce the end of the world will be destroyed, and he threatened the judge. The judge told him to stop some of these things, and he came in and he said, Your Honor, I'll get you later. That was the first day, and then he went on later to talk about his communication with God. He said, I communicate a message from eternal God. Today I will expect a reply from the Vatican. If the Holy See remains silent, I will continue to collaborate with the court. If it denies what I have said, I can no longer speak. So what he is saying is I'm collaborating with the court. He was originally given a life sentence, and he made the remark in court that I'm perfectly sane, I'm a rational man, I'm rather intelligent. And he said from his cage that people may think that he's crazy, but he's not. And he said there's no place in this trial for such definitions as whether he's crazy or not. Well, the place in the trial is for the question of leniency. He was, as I said, given a life sentence for 1 year, and then he changed his story. And if they could find a KGB Bulgarian plot, even going to the very highest in the Soviet Union, he would be out in 10 years. Well, he's been in for 5 years, 4 years, so he'd be out in 6 more years. So he can change his story, and he says that he'll continue with the court if the Vatican comes to see him, a representative of the Vatican, the Holy See. He'll continue to collaborate, work with the court, and manipulate these stories. That's how I translate it. But if they deny seeing them, he won't speak. And if he doesn't speak, he's the primary witness. And, of course, he links this alleged plot to the secret of the Madonna of Fatima, and this was a paper locked up by Pope John the 23rd, a prediction in 1960 on literally World War II, the destruction of humanity in the second half of the century. And I'm sure that Ajah wasn't skilled in all the Catholic stories about Fatima and so forth when he shot the Pope. Now, when he was in Turkey, he was making statements about shooting the Pope. The fellow who gave him the weapon from the Grey Wolves said he didn't know what he was using it for. Ajah was always a political animal, more political, in some ways overtly political, than Lee Harvey Oswald was ever political. And he never was to the side of the left or the communists. And he killed in Turkey a publisher who was a leftist publisher and wanted to kill the Pope. Well, to create the links to the KGB and to Bulgaria is exactly what the Nazis perfected with the Reichstag fire and Stefano Della Chiesa and the various counteractions, the bombings and the traces, the Red Brigades, the killing of Aldo Moro, to make it all look like leftist events. The skill of these people is to leave the traces that the left did it, and all the time they're working with the right-wing fascists. One very clever thing that came in the news was William Safire's article, and there's many to this effect. This came out last week, titled Turning the Spotlight on Cardinals and Conspiracies. And he's talking about the possibility that the plot will go up to the KGB, and that the CIA pulled back and had such discretion that they wouldn't disturb anything because they let it evolve into its own natural self, and that the CIA in Rome just were ridiculed because they wouldn't touch this story. And our CIA director at home, William Casey, says, wisely shut up and left it to Aja. Well, that isn't true. We had CIA people with Aja. We had them in the jail. We had them coaching him. And the whole point is that by Safire writing this, he puts the smear and the innuendo that the United States had the good taste of staying out, and now the Italian courts can work this plot out. Now, if Aja goes crazy, he's a primary witness, or blows the case, then the argument for the United States government for their propaganda against the Soviet Union would be the smears, like, we would have gone to trial, but Aja went crazy. But the innuendos and the smears are there, just like after the investigation of the Warren Commission assassination, looking into the Kennedy plot. They didn't find any evidence at all that Oswald worked with the right wing, or they didn't look for that, you know, just like Aja here. They looked for the left, for Castro, and always the suggestion of the Russian wife, the handbills in front of the World Trade Center in New Orleans, and making a record, I'm a Marxist with a man for military intelligence. The innuendo always was, and printed in the pages, like the Bulgarian connections, was the communists killed the president. Now, I can't believe that the court in Rome is going to come up with anything but a manipulative conclusion. Either the case will be thrown out because Aja will go crazy, or they'll continue along these lines. Remember the House Select Committee on Assassinations in 1978-79 in the United States spent $6 million to investigate the murder of John Kennedy again and Reverend Martin Luther King, and wouldn't touch any of the connections to the Nazis, to the YF, to Robert Morris, to Argentina, the things I wrote about in Rebel magazine. They put $16 million and wouldn't allow any input from Mae Brussel, wouldn't accept the Torbett document. So we have mastered the way to have massive investigations and still come up with nothing. And being as the CIA is literally running Italy and has for so many years, ever since World War II and even before, with the links to the Vatican and the intelligence of British intelligence, but particularly after World War II, they can manipulate anything they want. The evidence doesn't have to be important. The witnesses can be totally crazy. They can be fascists and say, well, we didn't know why he was going to use the gun, but we gave it to him a few days before. This is reliving a deja vu of what the Warren Commission was doing. And I think for a whole new generation studying history, it's worth looking at that trial carefully and seeing how, in the course of the events since 1981, how they take a story and weave it and print it and reprint it and reissue the same lies over and over again, and then come up with a cockamamie trial that is so ridiculous, and weave a fabric of a conspiracy here that makes you think that the Soviet Union and Bulgaria go out and shoot the Pope because of his involvement with Solidarity, and how the Polish Pope is nudging the Polish people to rise up against the Soviet Union and affect their policies. Now, if the Soviet Union wanted to kill the Pope, as explained many times, they wouldn't hire a man who walks into the area where the Pope's going to be and ask where St. Peter's is. They would have a man there and a backup, and if they wanted him, the Pope would be dead. You don't take a guy like this who's worked with fascist organizations, drug dealing, narcotic, just put them in that area, hand them a gun, and expect that that is the way the Soviet Union would want to kill the Pope if they wanted to kill the Pope. He's the most visible Pope in the world, and he didn't have the Pope mobile at the time, and was traveling all over the world and wanted to be seen and wanted to mingle with people. So it wasn't that hard. But this way, by keeping this alleged assassin alive, they can manipulate his mind and change the stories and create a story out of a non-story that they have worked for a long time, but the evidence may not have to fit it at all. And this trial would be going on for a long, long time, probably for a year, but I won't be updating it except occasionally because I've said pretty much about it in the past, so the individual names and the circumstances aren't that interesting. We'll take a one-minute break now, and then we'll come back, and I want to talk about the country of Brazil and what is going on there at the present time.